And now we want to tell you about the international attention one Oklahoma small town is getting. It is an unwanted spotlight, too, shining on the town of Tuttle because of a fight on the World Wide Web. News Channel 4's Allie Meyer is on the night beat with that story. She's joining us live from the K4.com desk with the details on this. What's happening here, Allie?
Well, Kevin, we found out about the story after we got an email from London. The mayor in the town of Tuttle has fielded more than 300 messages about this issue from all across the planet. Tuttle, Oklahoma, home of the Tigers, Heisman Trophy winner Jason White, and now a title they are not so proud of, international laughingstock.
When there's 300 of them in a two-day period.
Tuttle Mayor Lonnie Paxton tells us it all started last week, a minor problem with the city's website.
Jerry's the one to put this together.
It's supposed to look like this, but when the city manager logged on, this is what he saw, a test page indicating a problem.
In today's world where you have identity thefts and you have viruses on computers, it is this council's intent that our city manager protect our website and be aggressive about that.
Aggressive is right. The city manager, Jerry Taylor, fired off this email to one of the companies listed on that test page, Centos. I quote, "Who gave you permission to invade my website?" He writes, "Please remove your software immediately before I report it to government officials." A developer for Centos writes back, "Centos is not a website. It's the operating system. Though I'd be glad to help you." But the city manager fires back with more threats. "Get rid of this software. Second notice." He writes, "I'll file a complaint with the FBI." 17 emails later, and the city manager finally realizes Centos had nothing to do with the problem. But the battle was just beginning. Centos posted the entire correspondence online. Now Tuttle is getting heat from around the world. Unflattering comments like this one from Germany, wondering how the city manager can even tie his shoes. And another, "Does the name Village Idiot ring a bell?" Back in Tuttle, some are embarrassed by the blunder.
"I think we need to learn how to use computers."
Most are hoping Tuttle will fall off the international stage as quickly as it came on.
I don't know how, but I don't know why people from Switzerland are worried about it. I mean, we're this big.
You're smart as the next town, aren't you?
I believe so. Maybe even a little smarter.
Maybe a bit. Now, the mayor spoke on camera to us today because the city manager, Jerry Taylor, was unavailable. We're told he was out of the office. I also talked with the developer at Centos. He tells me the problem was with the company hosting the city of Tuttle's website. Centos says they can see how the city manager might have made the initial mistake. They said they've had similar misunderstandings a few other times, but never have they ever had someone be so hot.
Penile implant.
I keep wanting to say progesterone.
But I'm taking my prostate.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world's most popular open source podcast. It's episode 20 of Open Season.
Ow!
This is your host, Ashley Vance, and that's Matt Acey from Alfresco meowing in the background. And we have Dave Rosenberg, CEO of MuleSource.
That's my doppelganger.
Rosenborg.
I am Twittering right now.
Yeah, I'm going to out-Twitter you.
And that clip you just heard was a little flashback to a story we did on a CentOS kerfuffle that happened in Oklahoma. I'll put a link into our story in the show notes, but I just wanted to relive that moment once again. It's a couple years since it happened, but it was a classic Register story. And we've got an action-packed set of show notes in front of us. Namely, starting off, is Uncovered Ted has started writing a column for the Register, and Dave is writing a series of cloud computing stories.
Yeah, and everybody's crying about the grammatical usage of computing. Like, what a bunch of freaks you got over there.
That was my fault, though, because I said computing was a noun, which it is when it's used in a gerund form.
Ugh, Jesus Christ. Are these all English people? Is that what it is? Because, you know, Matt and I were both English majors. All right?
You were.
The Queen's English? Absolutely. No, I was, for real.
I always felt the strange bond with you, and now I know why.
I flunked out of engineering.
Well, we had the one guy pop up.
Which is why we blog.
That's right.
Actually, I wanted to compliment CNET on their iPhone coverage. It was 10 reporters, 5 bloggers, and, I think you guys really got that new iPhone nailed down. It's good to see that, CNET's
What's amazing is with 10 reporters and 5 bloggers, not one of us could actually get it activated.
What's more amazing is I actually haven't even seen one, and I drove thousands of page views just by talking about it. Tens of thousands of page views, for that matter.
We did a story on CNET covering the iPhone. Yeah, that went over real well with the CNET staff.
I fail to see the problem with making fun of that. It was absurd. It was absolutely ridiculous.
I thought it was pretty.
But I mean, Steve Jobs needs this.
To have 3 people covering 3 different lines for the iPhone is genius. Perhaps.
Well, you didn't even, and I know that I'm not a real CNET blogger. Or, I mean,
nor am I, Matt. And let's make the statement, Matt. We do not work for
CNET. We do not represent CNET. They hate us. Yeah. But, I mean, we don't have it in the show notes, but let's spend a second just talking about it. This was. Apple, theoretically, is at the top of its game. It rules the universe. Its market share is going up. I think it's 8.5% in the U.S. now. Everything's rosy for Apple. But what an absolute abysmal product launch and upgrade for the existing iPhones. It was terrible. And you know what? I'm using the iPhone 2.0 now software on my old one because I couldn't get a 3G despite holding one in my hands at one point in the day on Friday. And it's not, I mean, the App Store's nice, I guess, but I haven't, aside from like 5 minutes, I haven't used any of the apps that I scurried out and downloaded as fast as I could. And I even bought one, and I don't really know why. So I don't know, it's kind of underwhelming now after the fact. Maybe it's because we had CNET had 15 people covering it, and there was this mad foo-for-ah. But I think it's the end product is kind of underwhelming.
Yeah, I mean,
how dare you? Someone's gonna come to your house right now and assassinate you. It's probably gonna be somebody who actually works for CNET, unlike you and I, who just write blogs there.
I mean, it's pretty freaking insane that Apple usually doesn't botch things kind of that badly, especially on a launch day. But
they screwed the pooch on this, and Matt and I were discussing whether or not the cloud would have helped them. And the answer is no. I mean, this was back end system challenges between the update. They probably should not have rolled the update on the same day that they were rolling a new service. That would be my guess as to what might have made life easier. But, it's not like when Mozilla screwed the pooch on the downloads of Firefox where they could have used the cloud. I think Apple had different challenges. I mean, it's just not that easy to get all these systems to talk together to one another.
Yeah, while we're on mobile apps, I mean, Google had a bit of a screw-up this week, too, with the Android platform. I guess they're... Matt, you blogged about this in the Register. Cade Metz had a couple stories on this as well. They're kind of giving premium access to the early Android software to these guys who are involved in this contest. I think it's like $10 million up for like 50 Android apps or something like that. And, these other guys who aren't in the contest are so pissed off because they're these big Android backers and Google won't help them out with some fresh code. And then Google made the mistake of sending an email to like every Android developer that revealed, the guys in the contest were getting a fresh update. It's a definite, definite way not to make friends among the developer community.
Yeah, I don't know that they did from a legal standpoint, they didn't do anything wrong. And from like an open source standpoint, they didn't do anything wrong. But from a community building standpoint, they did just about everything wrong, I think. I mean, these captains of the universe, Google and Apple, they're doing some things really, really well, and then it seems like the little things, like telling people what you're doing and admitting mistakes. I mean, Apple finally did, at least with Mobile Me, they came out and said, we kind of suck, and so we're going to give you 30 days extension of the suckiness. But with, I don't know, I mean, I'm feeling some sympathy for Microsoft, because for all of its problems, it's suddenly looking not quite as much of a rag doll as it was before this happened.
What do you, what's,
It's got to be fun to gloat about the smugness of Google and Apple screwing up if you're Microsoft.
What's the point of, you know, Google giving this one set of developers kind of preference? I mean, just because they're in the contest, I don't understand the thinking behind that.
That's because you aren't in the in-group.
Why don't you get somebody from Google on this show and see if they'll talk about it? Oh, wait a minute. We tried that.
Yeah, that didn't pan out so well. Elsewhere in the software disgruntled kingdom, there's Miguel de Acasa was kind of piping up about the Linux desktop being under threat. Matt, did you say you did pay attention to that or you didn't?
Well, I read it, and I read all of that stuff, trying to figure out what exactly it meant. And I think it comes down to a splinter group within the Linux desktop community, the GTK Plus community, is saying, you know what, this Linux stuff kind of sucks. The Mac is cool. We use Macs. We love Macs. We think we should be more Mac-like. But I can't figure out whether they're just trying to create a new UI for the Mac or if they're... I'm not technical or smart enough to figure out what exactly they're trying to do, but I think, you know, for what's his name, Miguel, to point to the Mac guys and say you guys are the problem. Now the problem is that for the last 10 years we've been talking about Linux on the desktop and it just never happens. We've never had the Linux desktop, the year of the Linux desktop, and I don't think we ever will. And so if these guys are saying salvation lies elsewhere, you know, bless them and let them go try to find it, because they're certainly not going to find it with GNOME or this GTK crap, because it just hasn't worked yet.
It's this thing all over again. I mean, Miguel de Acasa says something and people, you know, I guess we're to blame. The Register ran and wrote it up, but, you know, I'm just not even sure how much people care these days, kind of what he, I don't know that his projects have enough weight behind him for, you know, him complaining to really do much.
Yeah, I think it's hard with the Novell, you know, as your backer and whatever else, and the things just have not progressed. The only person I think people listen to about the Linux desktop at this point is Shuttleworth, because at least, you know, he's out there making fairly dramatic changes to the way that it's built and how it's used.
Right. Speaking of Shuttleworth, God, I'm just nailing these transitions, I think. There's the Ubuntu restaurant out in Napa Valley. I don't think either of you guys have been there yet. Although,
not, we'll do our dinner and a movie episode of this.
So it's a
that was such a naked grab for page views. I wish I would have thought of it.
They say it's not a vegetarian restaurant; it's a vegetable restaurant / yoga studio.
That's not true, is it?
It is true. It is true. And but actually, you know, the guy's been reviewed in the New York Times and Food and Wine magazine and a couple other high-profile places. I mean, this is the place to go, apparently, in Napa these days. And they are shamelessly just stealing a Ubuntu operating system video on their homepage with Nelson Mandela talking about the meaning of the word. And I guess, but I asked Shuttleworth about that, and he said, you know, they're free to take the video in the open-source way.
Goddamn open source. This is why Apple is killing us all.
I'm actually weeping right now just thinking of the sentiment behind that. Right?
You know, while we're on the the subject of diets, we've got Matt's.
Were we on the subject of diets?
Well, we're talking about food and vegetarianism. Matt's what was he? He was your mentor, perhaps, at Stanford, Larry Lessig.
He was my mentor and thesis advisor, yeah.
He has a new diet. We have a little clip about Larry giving a speech.
Clip? Nothing. This is Larry. Hey, Larry, welcome to the show. What do you have to say?
I'm a professor of law at Stanford Law School. And I'm very happy to be here. I want to tell you a story.
Yeah, we're happy to have you.
A very close friend, a friend named Joey Ito, who had a diet. And Joey told me about the diet, and last September I started the diet. And within a couple months, I had lost about 60 pounds.
Yeah.
And then my congressman stepped aside, and I had a kind of Mike Huckabee moment. Where I thought, I've lost 60 pounds, I have to run.
He's not conservative
right?
enough to be Huckabee.
People suggested this idea of running for Congress, and I said I'd consider it. So for about a week...
Why does he talk like that? Did he talk like that when you were in class, where he does that inflection at the end of the word?
Yes.
Did that make you want to slit your wrist?
You know what? I actually didn't get along with him very well in the class because I found him idealistic, and I was actually trying to make a buck on open source software. I was working full time for Linio, this embedded Linux company at the time, and we were struggling to make money on this open source stuff, and I took a class from him called Open Sources where I learned that it was, in fact, divinely ordained to take over the planet. And I just wondered how I could make some money. And Tim O'Reilly came and spoke in the class, and we had Brian Behlendorf and others. But yeah, it was maddening. I've become kind of a bigot myself toward open source since that class, and so I find that I get along a lot better with them now. But I want this diet that makes you lose 60 pounds, and I think he lost about 40 pounds too many.
God, you should see him. I mean, he looks like death. He's like, he could eat Steve Jobs, you know?
And I'm actually hanging from the rafters of my office at this point, having myself in boredom and pain at that.
You know, what's funny is we wrote a story about Lessig, or about kind of the Google antitrust mess and Lessig's involvement in all this, and we called him Professor Google. And Matt, I don't know if he was the head of the department when you were there, but we got a very, very nasty letter from a Mr. Kramer, who is the dean of Stanford Law,
the dean.
I believe. And he said,
wasn't when I was there.
He said, no one else has ever called Lessig Professor Google. He said, you know, Google gave $2 million to fund the part of the law department that Lessig works in. So he's asked us to retract
Jeez.
These comments.
I don't know why they care. Like, who? I mean, somebody probably laughed at it and then kept moving, and making a big deal of it is only going to make it worse. But no, Kramer wasn't. But yeah, no, Lessig's a good guy. What's interesting in all this, and you brought up the Google thing, isn't it just, I don't know, I find it so blissfully ironic to see Microsoft being the one filing antitrust arguments against Google now. I mean, I just kind of wonder if Brad Smith or general counsel can do it with a straight face, given all that Microsoft went through. Maybe they can, but I mean, it strikes me as so amazingly ironic to have Microsoft being the one talking about being clobbered in the market. That just is proof. I know, Ashley, you don't believe this, but to me, it's proof that there is a God.
That was awesome. He faced up to it during the, we had him quoted. He was saying, I know this seems a little weird coming from us. while he was in the hearings. It was pretty funny. God bless.
speaking of the baby Jesus, did you get any heat from the Sun article about the potential acquisitions and whatever else?
Yeah, well, I mean, I did a story just noting, because I've got a friend who's kind of a money man on Wall Street, and he was pointing out to me that, you know, Sun's market cap, last time I checked, is around $7 billion, and that puts them in kind of mid-cap territory, and, you know, the large-cap funds are required to start selling off shares if the company kind of lingers in mid-cap territory for too long. And I think, like, InfoWorld followed on it, and eWeek, and Barron's, and, yeah, I got some flack. I got a pretty nasty note from a rather high-up executive at Sun.
$7.37 billion is where it's at today.
So, you know, they did that, I think it was a 4-for-1 reverse stock split like a year ago, or even less, like 7 months ago, and that kicked them up to $20 a share, and now from 4 to 20, or 5 to 20, and now they're getting pretty close to 5 again. So whatever psychological edge they were trying to get with that.
Oh, they're on $9.43 today.
Yeah, but who's, so I've been reading all those things, and, you know, the rumors. I mean, I don't know where that, I think that rumor came out of Barron's, or somebody said it, or maybe you said it, and then Barron's quoted it or something about Schwartz possibly being
there was a financial analyst who said he
thought okay. Schwartz. So, somebody said, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I would do in his shoes. I mean, so he's grasping about, and open source seems like one way of helping to drive sales, but it's hard to move the needle on that big of a company that's been kind of on the slide for so long. That, I mean, I worked for a company like that. It's called Novell, and it's years later, it's finally starting to seem like it's got some life in it. From a lot of it's being kickstarted from its Linux business and its identity management, but all its collaboration stuff and whatnot, group-wise, it's crap that nobody cares about. But, I mean, it took years. So we started doing that in early 2002, maybe even earlier, because I wasn't on the vanguard of the guys originally looking at possibly doing something with Linux. It's 2002, it's now 2008, and they're finally starting to make credible money from it and finally starting to look like a company that can subsist and then potentially someday thrive. It's going to take longer for Sun because Sun's that much bigger than it. I just don't know what I would do if I were in Schwartz's shoes. I have no idea.
They're in a tough spot because they've got about $4.5 billion in cash, you know, and the
three.
Just
like, no, it's only I'll three. Take,
what's
only
that?
Three. I'm looking right now. It's $3.3 billion.
$3.3 billion. And after this next quarter, I mean, they'll add like $300 million to that. They do generate cash kind of every quarter.
Yeah.
And I mean, it makes them a pretty attractive target for something, right? I mean, you get all that intellectual property, you get a little cash, you get some pretty impressive technology. So, you know, and meanwhile, so they're kind of in this vulnerable state, and then their core customers, the financial services guys, are just imploding. So it's going to be a tough road for the next year. So it's, you know, Matt, like you said, I mean, what else can you do? Because they've revamped their whole product line, and they have some of the best stuff out there. It's just, you know, unless you have something that is going to move the needle, like a whatever, an iPod moment kind of product, you're in a tough.
But that doesn't really exist in the enterprise anymore. I mean, that's the challenge. And, you know, you'll be able to read my Sun missing out on the cloud article on the Register soon enough. But but the fact of the matter is it's tough for them to do. And like, they've missed a lot of opportunities. They've sort of come out ahead of some trends and blown others. I mean, just consider Linux. Let's not forget that one. And they've pissed away a boatload of money on some very poor acquisitions.
Yeah, and I know my Sun Insider was complaining particularly just about, you know, whacking Solaris x86 10 years ago and how they're still kind of paying for that now because, you know, maybe they could have ramped that up a lot sooner and kind of caught some more momentum. But yeah, it's depressing because Sun's just this interesting company to cover because they do different stuff.
It's depressing too for open source companies who need these guys to be successful. So I mean, I look at it and I'm like, Jesus Christ, don't screw this up. You're making my life incredibly difficult. Plus, for a lot of people, I mean, there's going to be a lot of companies next year who are going to run out of money. And it's going to be the, uh-oh, what do I do now? And Sun, if they don't have the strategy or the market in place or whatever else, there's going to be nowhere for all these open source companies to go to get acquired.
There's all these rumors of the MySQL guys, the high ups, being really upset already. Have you guys heard anything along those lines that you can talk about?
I can say that I've talked with a few of them, and I've actually heard the opposite. Maybe I'm talking to the wrong guys, but I suspect that I would almost be willing to bet that some of the more developer types within the company have been unhappy, and I don't have any reason as to why that would be other than that just working for any new master is going to be awkward. But talking with the people that I talk to on a regular basis, I haven't heard that. But again, maybe I'm talking to the wrong people.
You know, as far as that iPod moment, I mean, do you think could MySQL have that potential at all, or it's such a long-term thing to make that generate?
Maybe, but Dave is right. I mean, the iPod moment, and it's hard to think of many enterprises that big software vendors that have been able to turn it around. IBM is one, and can you name very many others? Well, I mean, there aren't. I mean, Apple was about dead, but it could turn around because it's selling into consumers that can make a spot decision. Yeah, I'm going to buy that. That's cool. Enterprises don't really buy that way. I wish they did, but
you know,
they don't.
If they, I mean, it's a once in 10 or 15 years thing. You look at like VMware, I mean, they kind of pulled $2 billion in revenue up. I guess it still took them like 7 years, but I mean, Sun had some bit, like MySQL could be that.
But yeah, but you're not going to do like 100 million transactions, you know what I mean? Or however many transactions you would need to get to a billion in MySQL is not the way that they'll make money from it. It'll be from the bigger deals, you know, the 300K and sort of above, that kind of stuff. That's how they'll make money from it. So unfortunately, that means a longer sales cycle and whatever else, but they need to go for the bigger stuff.
You know, this is kind of chip stuff instead of software, but originally that ROC 16-core chip was meant to be coming out right about now, and that would have really given them like a game changer in the Unix server market, but of course, it's been delayed for a year, so no luck there. You know, away from Sun's failings, there were kind of a host of software blunders this week as well. Most notably, Levi's blowing out an entire quarter, largely to blame because of a failed SAP implementation. You got to think, why does anyone do SAP and Oracle, these huge These huge ships. I mean, it just seems like a recipe.
That's mind-blowing to me, that whole thing. I mean, they basically 98% of sales were lost because of that.
Yeah.
It's unreal. The other interesting one is there's that, was it Waste Management, which is like a massive garbage company, which you don't mess with garbage companies. I grew up in New Jersey. And they had a giant, like $100 million lawsuit that they're doing against SAP, which you got to wonder what the hell they paid for it to have to sue them for $100 million just to get back to working. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I love it. I mean, Levi's couldn't ship a pair of jeans. They didn't know where any of their orders were.
Don't talk bad about Levi's.
Don't talk bad about SAP. They'll come kill you.
And then today...
Support the garbage men.
And then this week we have Microsoft doing... what is it called? iMesh?
Mesh. It's Mesh.
It's just Mesh. So what is this? This is like a...
it's like the new cloud, whatever. It's just... It's junk. I mean, one of the things that I've been spending a lot of time on with this cloud stuff is the fact that these... Well, first of all, there's like two clouds. So every time we talk about it, we should really just expect that there's only two of them.
Matt,
but this Microsoft thing, it's like a P2P network to connect other Microsoft devices. And there's weird stuff like where there's web services with RSS and Atom. But it doesn't quite make sense. Like the mesh thing gets weirder all the time. And they keep changing the name of this stuff and they, you know...
So there's you mentioned Sarah Lacey being a Playboy bunny. There's a little Valleywag item that's popped up while we were on this call. It says at least four of the nine women chosen by Playboy editors for their hottest blogger contest are playing to lose. Some of them are asking to be removed from the contest.
She has to be taken out the first day because they apparently the Playboy staff, I can't believe this, duped them into the whole thing.
Well, if you read the original letter that was sent to them or the email, it doesn't say anything about this, you know, being in the magazine or anything like that. It was probably mildly flattering or maybe very flattering to some of them, or interesting. And then once the implications became clear, I doubt many of them or any of them will want to be in it. And I'm betting that you can't Photoshop somebody who looks cute on their little blog window, their 2x2 picture that sits up there in the left, top left corner. I'm betting that a lot of them probably wouldn't look very good naked.
I don't know. I just think, you know, like knowing Sarah, who's been a legitimate journalist, whether or not you think so, Ashley, different story, but, you know, has been a legitimate like journalist who's built her career and done all this stuff. And all of a sudden it's like, hey, cause she's hot. It's lame. And I, of course, do all these things too to everybody.
I'll post it is topless for Playboy, man. Come on.
I was going to say, having said that, if somebody wants to put the hottest male blogger things together, I will show my legs for any magazine.
I've got the name for the job. I think I should have got snuck in to the little ladies.
You have a porn name, don't you? Do you have a mustache? Can you grow a mustache within the next 24 hours?
The first call that I ever made as a journalist, I said, yeah, this is Ashley Vance calling from so-and-so. And she goes, my God, that's a porn name. It's like, oh, this is going to be a rough job.
The best part was that you had your pants off at the time.
I actually had to go to an office back then. It was rough days. I don't know why they didn't have the Hot for Words lady from YouTube. She's definitely the hottest blogger I know. Do you guys know the Hot for Words lady?
I've never even heard of it.
No, never heard of it.
No, we're too busy reading TechCrunch.
Well, I can assure you, you're missing out. She's quite the linguist.
I actually quoted Mashable today. How about that for depressing?
Wow. Dude, yes. you're dropping down.
Well, because I saw a thing about, there was for a while here in the Valley, there was this Facebook frenzy, as you all know, where it was like there was VC firms setting up to fund Facebook applications. And I kept saying to everybody, like, hey, doesn't anyone think this is stupid because Facebook could just turn it off or screw you over or whatever else? And they're like, no, it's the new internet. Well, guess what? Facebook just started cloning all the apps and turning stuff off. And so all these dumbasses who created these funds and everything else are like, oh, that's not cool, man. What the hell are you talking about?
I do remember you warning about this. Ahead of your time.
Thank you very much.
You warned about it on this very show. The show is ahead of its time.
Right. I'm like Peter Drucker or something.
You're kind of like him.
I'm like the guy from Schmuckers, not Truckers.
Gentlemen, I think we have to wrap this show up in a second, but I wanted to leave on a actual substantial note. Matt, I saw you were blogging about some outstanding new open source book. Can you give us the quick rundown on that?
Open Source and Intellectual Property, I think is the name of it, by Van Lindberg. And I only discovered after the fact that he's a BYU grad like myself, so I felt kind of bad plugging it, but I did it without knowing that we shared an alma mater. But fantastic. I mean, really, truly a very well-written book, the best written book on open source I've ever read, seriously. And it comes at it from the legal angle, so it's explaining legal concepts in open source and what does dynamic linking mean and when does the GPL apply and stuff like that. And it sounds kind of dry, but it's written, I don't know, it's written so well that I think it actually ends up being an extremely interesting book to read. And I would recommend it to anybody who has, who's involved in or around open source, who's using open source, whether they're at a Web 2.0 company, whether they're at an open source company, whether they're at whatever kind of company. I think it's worth reading. And again, it's one of those books that is not only interesting because of the subject matter, but it's actually well written. The guy should be an author, not a lawyer, which he is. He's a lawyer down in Texas, I think. I highly recommend it.
And if you're not into that, you can always find Larry Lessig talking on the web about his vegetable diet. And other than that, anything else, gentlemen?
Haven't you written a book? Shouldn't we plug that one once more?
I don't know. I think there was a bit of a backlash from my excessive whoring. But anyway.
Well, I like to think that one day Matt will write a book.
I'm sure he will.
That's my hope for today.
My day is on OpenSea.
We need to end with positive thoughts here.
I have written the topical guide, or not the topical guide, the table of contents for a book that I'd like to write. I just never have any time. I think I'm going to do a shortcut to writing a book like Zach Urlacher did and just publish a bunch of my blog entries in a book form and call it a book.
Just put your table of contents on Wikipedia and let it write itself.
That's genius.
Hey, Matt, before we go, can you explain this DVD player that you've purchased?
Oh, it's awesome. I haven't used it yet, but I, because I don't actually watch that many movies, but I used to, but then I got out of the habit because I'm kind of prudish about content, despite the fact that I'm on this call with you and your potty mouths. It's from ClearPlay, and I'm going to be reviewing it on CNET. And basically, you just put a normal DVD in there, and you can set how much violence, how much profanity, how much vulgarity, how much sex, how much nudity you want to see in the movie.
Can I get extra? Can I get like super violent?
So the immediate market is probably for people like me who want to cut the stuff out. But I was thinking, you know what? Really, what it's about is choice. And so maybe this means all of the DVDs that come out are the uncut director's version. And it does allow somebody who wants to see more violence, more sex, if you so choose, to be able to see that. And I mean, the problem is, the only way this company is going to succeed, it's ClearPlay is the company. The only way that they're going to succeed is by getting the technology built into a wide range of DVD players that are going out there. And they have some big OEM that they're set to announce in the not too distant future. I don't know who it is. But I'm thinking if they did some partnerships with like Netflix, if they could easily integrate their technology with like, say, Comcast for their DVR or any of these cable companies or Dish networks or whatever they are. They need to get it. It really needs to be an OEM play because by themselves, it's just not going to work. But I mean, you should try it out. I mean, you guys probably don't have any interest, but for me, I kind of like it. And they, even movies like that aren't bad, like Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark for my kids. There's some language in there that I don't really want to hear. And I certainly don't want my kids to hear. And so it's easy. We just set to excise the language and we watch the exact same movie and it just bleeps
it
out.
What does it do to the nudity? It was like a little napkin that comes out.
No. I think what it does is it basically puts little filters. There's a software filter on the DVD player that tells the machine when to skip, when to bleep out, when to do these things.
This
so
might
I think
be boobs kind of thing.
I think for those things, it would just skip past it. And for most of the movies, even like if you cut out the nudity, you're cutting out like 5 seconds of a movie, and you'd never notice. So
Join me and Ashley on our new video show, Ultraviolence.
Yeah, I mean,
ultraviolence and porn.
Unless that's
no, but if you think about it, so like in Europe, violence is. I mean, if you go to a movie and the ratings in the U.S., the rating system tends to punish movies that have sex in it, so they'll give an R rating much more readily than if it's got people being decapitated right and left. That still may get a PG-13. In Europe, it's the exact opposite. So it's violence. Sex, you know, is not a big deal. And so I was thinking that even just cultural differences, you might have a family in, or somebody, just anybody in Europe that wants the violence excised out of the movie as they're watching it, but doesn't care at all about having the nudity excised out. And in the U.S., it may be the exact opposite. So I don't know. I think it's actually a good idea.
So you tell me... You're telling me there's like boob metadata on DVD?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, how did they do that?
No. Somebody, they have a team of people that watches the movie and with their software or whatever sets, okay, at 3 hours and 1 minute, we need to chop forward by 5 seconds to skip this scene and whatnot. No, there's somebody that actually is.
So you can only watch DVDs that are on like a set list.
Yeah, but the list is pretty big. I mean, of any new movies, basically, it's going to be on there. And I was going back and looking up like Rushmore and some of my other favorite movies, and they're all there.
What a job, man. You just sit there. It's like, yeah, that's Bush at 1:15.
I asked them about that because there used to be this. You're not from Utah, so you're not familiar with these sort of controversies. But at BYU, my alma mater, there used to be the Varsity Theater, which made national headlines with... when Spielberg came out with Schindler's List, that was when the Varsity Theater was finally made to close down, because up till then they had edited movies all the time. And so you'd be able to go and watch in a movie theater, Platoon or whatever, and you'd see it edited. But Schindler's List, Spielberg freaked out when I think they pulled out the sex scene. I've seen Schindler's List, but I've only seen it edited. But I understand there's a sex scene in it. But at any rate, the controversy was... that somebody, some lucky student somewhere, was the one watching all the movies, deciding what to excise out, and probably had some, you know, DVD full of all the bad scenes that they just watched every night or whatever.
What a different world I grew up in, I have to say.
You grew up in New Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're not close to New York and have that experience. But I think, do you think it's wrong then that I give my baby an 8-ball and a sock to play with on the playground? Is that wrong to teach her that behavior? She's like 14 months now. She can kick some ass. And the language come from her too. It's just completely offensive.
Rushmore, filmed at my high school, by the way.
Was it? I thought it was actually filmed at... Isn't there a Rushmore school down in... Texas,
it's St. John's School in Houston, Texas, but it's not called Rushmore. The director, Wes Anderson, he's a St. John's alum.
That is quite possibly, well, it's in my top five. I've never seen it unedited, so maybe it's even funnier with the scenes cut out, or that scenes that
There's
were
like
cut out.
Nothing just bad in that movie. What are you protecting yourself from?
I can't think of it either.
Probably some language.
Matt, go all the way, man.
How old are you now, Matt?
No, I don't want to see it. That's the thing.
That's what's sick. That's what's sick about you, is that you don't want to see it.
You don't drink. You make some choices.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's because of my severe drug and porn addiction. Now, someone will, by the way, will take that clip and quote me back on it and be like, oh, you said this. And that'll end up...
I'm going to.
Yeah.
Well, as the...
Speaking of which, I'd like to make my last comment that I guess we edited out a lot of my comments, thankfully, on the last show, and yet I still had a number of people be like upset that I was I had the audacity to react to someone being negative about me.
What did they say?
Which I set my Facebook status as "Go fuck yourself" was my answer.
I did. It took me like 3 hours to edit all the stuff tapes said on the last.
I got people
call.
Who were like, "Oh man, what are you mad about?" I'm like, well, I got a bunch of bitches up in my grill. That's why. If I make it.
Well, now flip. with that said, and as the complete and total degenerate on the call, I just want to thank everybody for tuning in to this episode of Open Season. As always, leave your comments in the show notes. We did, I have tallied the suggestions for the guests. I think Sarah Lacey won. It wasn't very hard to tally them because you guys are so freaking lazy that only about 5 people voted. And so we will get Sarah Lacey on the show once my little baby boy has arrived. And thank you guys all for tuning in, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.